Good afternoon. Happy Sabbath to you today. It's good to see everyone here. Welcome to our guests. So the message I had, I have today, I was actually planning to give it last week when I spoke, but circumstances changed and you got a different message last week than what I intended to give, so I hope it was a blessing to you. Today what I want to talk to you about is something that I think we can discount the value of in the Christian community. And even when we realize the value of it, we don't always realize how it works. So, I would like to talk to you today about the power of testimony. The title of this sermon is Run, Tell That. And we're going to go through some stories that I hope will allow you to remember how good God has already been to you. Because I believe in each and every one of our lives, God has already proven himself that he is. All those things that our children are learning in Bible study, that he is, how much he loves us, what he has done for us. But we still get discouraged and we still get down. Why is that? So I want us to remember to use testimony as a reminder to ourselves of how good God is. But we can also use it to empower our community. I think sometimes we're shy and we don't share some of the things that God has done for us because we might think it's insignificant or it's too small. But this world is full of haters and doubters, right? So even when you have something that's good and you say, wow, this is amazing, many people have the tendency to dismiss that. It's also a key to victory. It truly is, because this road that we walk isn't easy. Whether you're talking about starting a career or sustaining a marriage. What about health challenges, financial challenges? This is the key to victory. And point number four is going to be, we serve the same God. You know, that omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient being that created us is the same God that did all those stories that we read about. I'd like to open in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, it says simply that the weapons we fight with are not the weapons of this world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. That's 2 Corinthians 10, verse 4. In Christ, our Passover Lamb, Yeshua the Messiah, Emmanuel, we have powerful spiritual weapons, but many times we find ourselves improperly armed for the battles that we are facing. And I want you to think about that, because sometimes we think that, you know what, if we have a health challenge, the weapon is the doctor or the pharmaceutical company. If we have a problem in our marriage, we might think, oh, we just have the wrong spouse. Right? If we think we have financial problems, maybe the answer is to rob a bank. Oh, wait. Oops, did some of my flesh just come out? But Paul is talking about a divine power that has the ability to destroy strongholds. So what is that power? Well, I think that power is grace. That power is God's amazing grace. It's unmerited and it's available to all believers. But we must choose to wield it. God won't force our hands. God's grace has been sufficient to help us overcome every single hardship that you've had in your life so far. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. It also empowers you to go beyond your natural ability. When we hear about grace, it's mostly taught as something that's just a covering for sin. And it does do that. But it does more. If we just use it as that, it's no wonder that Christians and believers today aren't shining brightly in this world of sin. We should be distinguishing ourselves in every aspect of life. We just heard who God was, right? That's what we're teaching our kids. All-powerful, all-knowing, everywhere. Someone that loves you and cares for you. Now, that's the God I serve. He's a God that said his people are going to be the head, not the tail. He says that you're going to be lenders, not borrowers. He says that if you are in prison, I am here to set you free. If your heart is broken, I'm here to mend it. Right? Same God, Old Testament and New Testament. That's what he said. So if we truly grasp God's grace and his empowering presence in our lives, we're supposed to take up these spiritual weapons to fight the war. The war that our enemy, Satan the devil, wages on God's creation. The Messiah tells us he came here to kill, steal, and destroy. He wants to kill God's creation. He wants to steal God's power. And he wants to destroy God. And if we're his people, that means us. So the enemy is not going to let you easily impact this world. He's adamantly opposed to our mission. So we have to press through when challenges of life come in order to achieve our objective. So what does that mean? Steve, you just said a whole bunch of good sounding stuff. What does that mean? How is that tangible? And how does that relate to testimony and those things you talked about? Well, I'm glad you asked, church. Let's talk about that. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, I'm going to read verse 1 and 3. Okay, and Paul is telling Timothy, it says, "You therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Jesus Christ. Therefore, you must endure hardship as a good soldier." He's telling him to endure this hardship. Okay, well, there must be more, right? Of course there's more. How do we deal with these hardships? How do we endure these hardships that I'm sure each and every one of us is facing? I didn't have any special word from the Lord today about each and every one of your lives, but I can tell you this, every single one of you in here has something that's weighing on you, that's concerning you. An area of your life that could be better. It might be financial, it might be a job, it might be a relationship, it might be health-wise. We have challenges. I don't know what's going on in everybody's lives, but I know that the devil has that same agenda to kill you, to steal from you, and to destroy your life. He has lots of experience, and he's good at his job, ain't he? So let's talk about our keys to victory. The story I'm going to use today is the story of David and Goliath, and we can find that in 1 Samuel chapter 17. Now, I'm not going to say read because it's too long. It's verses 1 to 54. I'm going to go through them. So I'm going to summarize some of the verses so we understand the story. So in verse 1 of chapter 17, it tells us that the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Succoth in Judah. And in verse 2, it tells us that Saul and the Israelites camped in the valley of Elah, and they drew up their battle lines to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill, the Israelites the other, with the valley between them. Now, that's kind of how they fought back in the day. You know, we just line up and run at each other. Okay. But this is where this battle is going to turn, and it's going to be different than traditional battles they fought. In verse 4, it says, a champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, and I want us to pay attention to that fact. He was from Gath. It was a city in the Philistine country. Came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. So he was about 9 feet 9 inches. That's impressive. So I'm 6'5", and most people say you're tall. Somewhat. I'm not even the tallest person in my family. I used to live next to this professional basketball player. And I remember the first time I met him. I was walking up to him, and I'm not used to looking up to people, right? And he was only 6'9". But as I was walking up, my head kept going up and up and up, like, wow. It's imposing being next to someone so tall. Another time, I was going out for brunch on a Sunday, not too far from where I live. And Yao Ming, he was a center for the Houston Rockets, was walking, coming towards me. And when I walked by him, I was like by his waist. And I'm like, that's just awkward. Not used to that. And neither of them were close to being 9 feet 9 inches tall. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a scale of armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. That's about 15 pounds. So this is a very imposing figure, and his shield bearer went ahead of him. So Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man, have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I have defied the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. So we see the challenge here. We see the bad guy. We see the opposition. He's imposing, he's brash, he's bragging. And no one has the courage to stop him. Now we have David. He enters the picture. In verse 12, it says, "Now David was son of the Ephrathite Jesse, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. Jesse had 8 sons, and in Saul's time, he was very old. 3 of Jesse's oldest sons had followed Saul to war. David was the youngest. But David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's sheep at Bethlehem. For 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and took his stand." So this was going on for a while. So you can imagine the situation in the Israelite camp, right? They were demoralized. Do you know that when it comes to fighting war, troop morale is one of the keys to victory? You can have a better armed army, but if they're not motivated to fight, chances are they will lose. That's just a lesson from history. Over and over and over again, we see that demoralized armies can't fight. Can I tell you something? I'm not talking about war. I'm not even talking about David and Goliath right now. Demoralized armies can't fight. Fighting takes energy, commitment, passion. You have to want it more than your opponent. So what Goliath was doing right here, what we call it today, we call it psychological warfare. We still do it. Sometimes in a war, you know, one team, they'll send bombers over, but not with bombs. They'll send them with flyers, saying, "You will lose," or "We've killed this many of you," or "Just surrender and you can have peace." And it works. So this psychological warfare was working. In verse 17, it says, "Now Jesse said to his son David, 'Take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread to your brothers and hurry to their camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit. See how your brothers are and bring back some assurance for them. They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting the Philistines.'" Jesse didn't know they weren't fighting. They were cowering in their tents. Verse 20, it says, "Early in the morning, David left the flock in care of a shepherd and loaded up and set out, as Jesse has directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out into battle positions, shouting the war cry." That must be the weakest war cry ever, because they didn't want to fight. Verse 21, it says, "Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of supplies and ran to the battle and asked how his brothers were. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out of his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying, 'Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel.'" In verse 28, "When Eliab, David's older brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, 'Why have you come down here? And whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You only came down here to watch a battle.'" This is a very, 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 very important statement in the story, and it's a very important statement in how testimonies work. See, David had done nothing wrong here. But sometimes when someone is demoralized, when someone is bitter, when someone is miserable, they can attack you for no reason. They can make assumptions about your intentions. And when you try to give testimonies, they might say, oh, you're stuck up. You're arrogant. But David hadn't done anything. He said, now what have I done? Can't I even speak? Don't let anyone shut your testimony down. Don't let anyone shut your testimony down. So this is where we start with the testimony. See, David said to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Saul replied, you are not able to go out and fight him. You are only a young man, and he has been a warrior since his youth. So the situation looked impossible to Saul the king. And he wanted it fixed. He was ready to give away his daughter in marriage. He was ready to give somebody great wealth. He was ready to exempt them from taxes. Do you know what it takes for governments to exempt somebody from taxes? He really wanted this problem gone. But this is where I bring up point number one, the purpose of testimony. It's for you as a reminder. So in verse 34, David said to Saul, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. Remember that insult his brother said? How come you're not out there with them few sheep? You're just here for mischief. Your heart's dirty. But this is what he said. He said, when a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, I struck it, and I killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. So he's giving that testimony for himself. It's reminding him of what God has already done. See, the challenges and the things that we've had to overcome are necessary because it's preparing us for greater challenges. It's a reminder that we can do it. And he gives glory to God. He said, the Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine. So the first point, the reminder, is for us. It's to letting us know, hey, you know what? God did bring me this far, through the pain, through the hurt, through the loss. I'm still here. Through the uncertainty, through financial difficulties, through health challenges. So it's a reminder. And we need reminders. You know why we need reminders? Because we all have people like Eliab in our lives, ready to doubt everything that you have done, ready to doubt where you've been, ready to say, you're not worthy, you can't do this. Why don't you go be with your sheep? You know, most people that do great things have doubters saying they can't do it. You ever think about that? Because it takes a different mindset, a different set of thinking for you to step out and do what everybody else is doing. See, if David did what everybody else was doing, you know what he'd be doing when Goliath came for it? He'd be turning and running. That's what it says in your Bible, right? I know I summarized it, but I didn't miss that part. They turned and they ran. Verse 24, if you want to circle that. The running Israelites. So he had to do something different. And for him to do different, he had to draw on the past of what God has done for him so far. So that's his first point in testimony. So we know the story. Saul tried to dress David in his kingly armor. He put all those things on him. And in verse 39, when he put on the sword and the tunic and he tried walking around, he said, I can't take these. I like how the King James put it, okay? In the NIV, it says he couldn't use them because he wasn't used to them. In the King James, it says he couldn't use these weapons because he hadn't proved them. And that's what a reminder is. A reminder is something that you have proven. So he said, I'm not going to use these weapons. That's what we read in Corinthians, how we started, right? We have different weapons. So we're going to go with the weapons we proved. So the battle is going to take place. In verse 39, he took them off. I haven't proven these. But in verse 40, it says, then he took his staff in his hand and he chose 5 smooth stones from the stream. He put them in a pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in hand, he approached the Philistines. See, even his weapons, remember what I said about the weapons? The weapons tell us what kind of war we're fighting. And he chose 5 stones. Pay attention. It says, meanwhile, in verse 41, the Philistine with the shield bearer in front of him kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. He said, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? If you watch VeggieTales, I like how they say it there. They say it with a French accent. It just... And the Philistines curse David by his gods. Come here, he said. I will give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. In verse 48, it says, as the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his head, and he fell face down to the ground. So David just rocked him to sleep. It was game over for Goliath. But David was fighting a different kind of battle, right? His morale came from what God had done for him. His weapons came from what God was going to do for him. And he had expectation because of his testimony. That's why he took those 5 stones. So when the Philistines saw their hero was dead, they turned and they ran. The men of Israel and Judah surged forth and with a shout and pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath and to the gates of Ekron. Then David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem and put the Philistine's weapon in his own tent. Wow. So that was a good story. How are we going to relate this in? So David gave us an example of testimony. Everything in your past can be used for a testimony. Or it could be used for an example. You want to know the difference between a testimony and an example is? Well, I'm glad you asked. I'm about to tell you. See, we can learn by two different ways. We can see an example, and we can learn, okay, that's how I should do it, right? A testimony, that's how I should do it. Or we could see an example and say, oh, that's not how I should do it. I don't want to do that. I have 7 kids. And with the younger kids, sometimes it's easier to point out situations that happen with the older kids. And they could be like, oh, yeah. I saw when they did it this way, this happened. But I saw when they did it this way, that happened. That's how testimonies and examples work. And I'm saying, let's use what we have in our lives as testimonies. When we think about Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, those people in the Bible, we can learn from their testimonies, but we can also learn from their examples. Right? Everybody, everyone in this Bible, just about, maybe Samuel, Josiah, there are a few, where it's all good, it's all testimony, but most of the people in the Bible, they have some examples, right? Of what not to do. In Corinthians 10, it tells us this. I'm going to start in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 10. My Bible has subheadings for paragraphs. I like the subheading for this paragraph. The subheading says, "Warning from Israel's History." And it says, in verse 10, it says, "For I do not want you to be ignorant, brothers and sisters, that our ancestors were all under the cloud, and they all passed through the sea. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and the sea. They ate the same spiritual food and drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them. That rock was Christ." So they had Jesus even back then. "Nevertheless, God was not pleased with them. Their bodies were scattered in the wilderness." It says in verse 6, "Now these things occurred as examples to keep us from setting our hearts on evil things as they did." In verse 11, it repeats that. It says, "These things happened to them as examples and were written down to us as a warning." So, if you think you are standing firm, be careful not to fall. No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so you can endure it. Why is that important? Well, testimony can empower a community. I like hearing testimony from people who have overcome drugs, alcohol, criminal lifestyles. I like to hear when drug dealers turn their life around. Because it tells us that God is still the same God. And it reminds us of the situations that we're involved in, okay? We can overcome. So when I look out, I could say the same thing. No temptation is facing you, is facing any of us that's not common to mankind. Anything that you're dealing with. But also, God isn't giving you more than you can endure. Now, you might not have mastered it yet, but God is patient, he's kind, he's gentle. And we have testimonies from people in this book who have gone through the same thing. There's testimonies from people in the church who have gone through the same thing. In Revelation 12, starting in verse 7, it says, "Then a war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back. But he was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. The great dragon was hurled down, that ancient serpent called the devil, or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. He was hurled down, his angels with him. Then I heard a loud voice in heaven say, 'Now have come salvation and power and the kingdom of God and the authority of the Messiah. For the accuser of our brothers and sisters, who accuses them day and night before God, he has been hurled down. They triumph over him.'" Okay, I know we like to say it's just Jesus, but it tells me here the key to victory is two things: by the blood of the Lamb, and by the word of their testimony. So it absolutely is a key to victory, just as it was for David. Because it's God who's given you the material to testify about. Don't let people silence you. Don't let people think it's mischief. Don't let people discount what you're saying. You know, sometimes I've given testimonies when people say, well, you're bragging. I said, well, you heard me say. When I give testimonies about what God has done for me, especially in the business and financial realm, I always tell people, I started here 13 years old with a suitcase and a little sister. That's what I say, right? Not wealthy parents. Not political connections. Has anyone ever heard me brag about that? No. But people doubt. But don't let someone doubt your key to victory. Because whatever you are struggling with, okay, God has already said in the Bible, listen, I'm stronger than what you're going through. Don't be afraid of Goliath. Think about when he rescued you from the lion and the bear. But your testimony is not just for you. It's for your community. How does that work? Well, let's keep reading the story. See, most people end the story of David and Goliath with David and Goliath. But that's not how testimonies work. Just like those examples from Israel, that's not how it works. The story keeps going. All the things that you triumph over in your past, that story is still going because you still have challenges to face. And the things that you haven't beaten yet, the story isn't over. You're still breathing. God has given you time. So in 2 Samuel, chapter 21, we're going to read 15 to 22. And I'm going to tell you about David's friends and Goliath's four brothers. Yeah, he took up five stones. See, David's friends, Israelites' army that was afraid of Goliath, they weren't just afraid of Goliath. They weren't. See, those Philistines from Gath, they were big people. Big people that like to brag and have big weapons. And they like to run their mouth about what we gonna do. And the Israelites, they didn't have any testimony. They didn't have any example. They didn't know it was possible to defeat that kind of giant until David did it. So in verse 15 of 2 Samuel 21, we see it says, once again there was a battle between Philistines and Israel. And David went down with his men to fight against the Philistines. And he became exhausted. And Ishbi-benob, one of the descendants of Rapha, you can note that, whose bronze spearhead weighed 300 shekels and who was armed with a new sword, said he would kill David. Why? Because you killed my brother. But Abishai, son of Zeruiah, came to David's rescue and he struck the Philistine down. Then David's men swore to him, saying, never again will you go out with us in battle, so that the lamp of Israel would not be extinguished. See, he was the lamp of Israel because of that testimony. He showed them that it was possible. Now, how do I know this guy was a giant? Well, it gave us the weight of his bronze spearhead, which was 300 shekels, which is 7.5 pounds. 7.5. How far can you throw 7.5 pounds? And that's just the spearhead. In the course of time, there was another battle with the Philistines at Gob. At this time, Sibekai, the Hushite, kills Saph, one of the descendants of Rapha. In another battle with the Philistines at Gob, Elhanah, son of Jairi, the Bethlehemite, killed the brother of Goliath, the Gittite, who had a spear like a weaver's rod. So I just looked that up. How long is a weaver's rod? It's 10 feet long. That's tall. What? I know what Yao Ming looked like when I walked by him. And in verse 20, it says, in another battle, which took place at Gath, there was a huge man with six fingers on each hand and six toes. It's like they keep getting bigger and stronger, and now we're into mutant giants. Twenty-four in all. He was also descended from Rapha. When he taunted Israel, just like Goliath did, Jonathan, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, killed him. Remember when even David's brother didn't want to fight? They would run? So it says, these four were descendants of Rapha and Gath, and they all fell at the hands of David. Why is it giving credit to David? Because he was the one who started it, and his men. And in verse, 19, just so that you guys know that I'm being spiritually correct with the scriptures, it does tell us that the giant that was killed there was Goliath's brother. So we see now this former demoralized army that was afraid to fight one suddenly turned into giant killers. Like they were no longer afraid of that situation because of the light that David gave to them when he shared his testimony about what God did. So that's why our testimony is important. It's not just for us, even though it is for us, to silence those doubters. The people who say, oh, you're bragging. David wasn't bragging about killing a lion or a bear. He was reminding himself, this is what God did. So you know what? That guy, I don't know about that guy, but I know about the lion and the bear. So yeah, you know, and I see his brother. Okay, you know what? All y'all gonna get it. He was ready. But guess what? He only had to use one, because that's the power of testimony. He took five stones, but only one was for him. Only one was for him. The point was to empower that community, to enlighten them. We read how it is the key to victory. Because when we move from David and Goliath and we talk about the giants in our lives, and I'm not talking about my neighbor, I'm not talking about Yao Ming, I'm talking about what you're going through. You have this respite on the Sabbath. You can rest, you can relax, you don't have to worry about work or finances or health or your family situation or relationships or children or any sin that you're struggling with, health issues. But I think some of us are worrying about financial issues and health and career issues and relationship issues. Right? Because we know that giant every day is going to come out and talk yak. And it's still here. Day after day after day after day, that giant is coming out. And demoralizing you. And when you're demoralized, you can't fight. Why would you want to? You're looking at the giant. So I'm asking you to remind yourself about what God did. Because the testimonies you have, they can do a lot, but the first person it's for is you. See, I can tell you about the time when I was 13 years old and we just came to this country. We had no money, no health insurance, and I was laying on the bed having an asthma attack and I could not breathe. And I was scared. And my mom asked me, "Do you believe that Jesus can heal you?" I said yes, and she prayed over me, and I've never had an asthma attack since. See, that's powerful. When something like that happens, in that testimony, no one can tell me God isn't real. I don't care how many degrees you have, Dr. Tyson Degrassi. You can't tell me that God isn't real. So when my kids are sick, and that giant is in front of me, I can trust God because I know he can do it. I know, not what I read, not what somebody told me. I know. He can heal. And he's still in the healing business. You know, churches argue about this and that, and does God work this way or this way? Let me tell you something. He can heal. 100%. So you have that testimony. I tell you testimonies of when God opened opportunities for me. And I bought houses, full houses, for like $8,000 and $9,000 and $12,000. And those same houses are worth $120,000. And you can't keep them. People just buying them. I can tell you how I came here with Nothing. Zero. Like, for real. I like telling people, we weren't even poor, right? P-O-O-R. We was po. We couldn't afford the O. We couldn't afford the R. We was just, ugh. Okay? But let me tell you, I've told some people that story in churches, and they're like, oh, you bragging. What? Was I bragging about being po? Exactly. Because guess what? It tells us that there is a time when they will throw money in the streets. So I know that God can feed me. I could go on and say, you know what? Opportunities that were closed from me because I was a Sabbath keeper. Right? So here's where the rubber meets the road, because people don't like it when you talk about what you do and what you accomplish, but we need to tell our young people that God will make a way. I'll tell all you, God will make a way. You don't have to compromise your values. Not everything out there is for us. When David got the king's armor, he didn't say, oh yeah, this is good. He said, no, I haven't proved this. I've proved God, and I can tell you that I've proved God. So he will open doors for you. And doors that he does not open, they are not for us. And I can keep going on and on and on and on. I'll brag about my blessings, but I'll tell you, God is the one who did it. Listen, I'm not smart enough. I don't have a crystal ball to schedule my once-in-a-lifetime family vacation to Hawaii right before a COVID lockdown starts. Yeah, I planned it. I knew it was coming. No, that's not how it went down. But like it says, we have examples in the Bible. We can see during the Exodus story that the children of Israel were in Goshen. And we saw 10 plagues fall everywhere around them. There was a death angel just killing people, and not a dog barked in Goshen. And they were in Egypt. They were in enemy territory, surrounded. Nothing happened. So get it straight. When you hear a testimony, and I tell people, guess what? I was on the beach at the Four Seasons in Hulali, okay? Eating brunch when people were shooting each other over toilet paper in Flint. It's to let you know that no matter what you are going through or where you are now, God can take you to great heights. You get that? That Abraham left everything he had, everything he knew. And God blessed him. Blessed his offspring. Blessed him financially. Don't limit God. Bless his lifespan. And Abraham had problems. Guess what? Abraham wasn't like David. When the king of Egypt said, oh, wow, that lady looks good. He's like, that's not my wife, that's my sister. Here, take her. And he did that twice. What? And guess what? Isaac came, and Isaac did the same thing. And you know what the Bible tells us? Isaac loved Rebekah from the moment he saw her. Rebekah. And the same thing. Oh man, who's that? She looked, you can have her, that's my sister. Or what about Jacob? Because we talk about Jacob, right? He's going to trick his daddy to get the blessing? That's what he did, right? So my point is, you don't have to be perfect. That's written in there. That's written in there. You guys have heard me speak enough. I tell you all the good stuff. I tell you the bad stuff about me too. Malachi 3:6. We talked about grace earlier and how it relates to testimony. And here, God is giving us a testimony about him. It says, "For I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore, you sons of Jacob are not consumed." And Hebrews 13:8 says, "Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever." So how does testimony work? How does it tie in with grace? It lets us know that the same God that did all those things that we read about, the same God that does all the things that our parents, grandparents have told us about and we experience, he is still in the saving business. He is still in the healing business. He is still in the deliverance business. So whatever is your giant, whatever has you demoralized, whatever has you dismayed, I want you to know that God got it covered. He hasn't brought you this far to abandon you. And I want you to think about what he's done so far and run, tell those messages.